The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
With businesses beginning to really feel the impact of rising energy costs, could an EU-wide emergency intervention be the answer? And will schools feel the pinch, particularly with the removal of COVID supports for this academic year? For some insight on this, I'm joined now by Brussels-based EU correspondent Jack Parrock, CEO at Ismay Neil MacDonald, and principal at St Etienne's National School in Westmead, Matt Melvin. And let's begin with the EU response, because obviously there have been a range of different impacts and a range of different responses depending on the member state in question. There is more and more pressure coming on the EU centrally to do something in response to the vast increases in energy prices. Jack Parrock, so far, what has the answer been to that pressure?
Well, it's been a bit of a patchwork picture so far, and it's been really complicated. And that's actually why we've seen the Czech presidency of the European Council announce a special emergency meeting for September the 9th, which will take place in Brussels to try and get some unity on these issues. We understand that the price of natural gas across the average has gone from 18 euros per megawatt hour to 310 since June. So an enormous rise. And there's a lot of questions, obviously, about why that's happening. Obviously, the war in Ukraine and the supply issues from Russia, but also what's happened with different member states. So, for instance, Germany has been out there buying up as much gas as it possibly can to fill up its storage facilities, which has skewed the price upward, as there's obviously been demand from Europe's biggest economy. Spain has put on has subsidized and put on caps, for instance, which has meant that while the power has gone down in price in Spain, it's also meant that there's been some leakage. So, for instance, people have been purchasing energy across the border into France. And what the EU ministers are trying to do is to get some sort of unity and some sort of clarity on that. And the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said that there will be some emergency intervention, that they're going to fundamentally reform the power market, she says. Question is, what will they do? How willing will they be? The European Union, as a sort of organization in Brussels, doesn't like intervening in markets.
And as markets go, if you are trying to pick one to intervene in, the pan-European energy spot market is one of the most confusing and complicated markets that there is. So it isn't going to be an easy task for bureaucrats to say, let's change this fundamentally.
No, you're very right. And also politically, it's extremely difficult as well, on top of just the sort of structure of it. The reality is that citizens are looking to their own national governments to sort this out for them, to bring their prices down. They're seeing in their homes, this is such a sort of directly affecting thing for consumers, for citizens. And so the question is exactly what happens as each country tries to resolve its own issues. But the reality is it's a bigger issue for the whole of the European Union. And the question will be how far can they go on this? The European Commission President von der Leyen, she said yesterday, she did a big speech and she said, this is far enough and no further. The prices cannot be skewed upwards any further. But it is also a global issue as well. So we'll have to wait and see how far they're willing to go, how quickly they are willing to make those deep reforms that they say are needed to prevent us having an extremely difficult winter. And just a final point as well, it's a really complex situation for countries like Ireland, an island nation heavily reliant on the UK for its energy, for instance, as are other countries. Cyprus and Malta, the island nations of the European Union, have a really, really difficult time because obviously of the geographical nature.
Lastly, Jack, can I ask you about the political support for this? Because obviously a large driving factor in the increase in energy prices was the EU response to Russia's invasion into Ukraine and an attempt to punish Russia for so doing. If it becomes more evident that what Russia is able to do is, instead of flowing gas through Nord Stream 2, is to just flow it in the direction of China and other markets, and it isn't having a significant effect on them, but it is on us, how long will the citizens of Europe support that kind of action?
That is the really big question. It's all interconnected right now. Russia's war in Ukraine and the reaction from the European Union has meant that Russia, I mean, they're burning some of the excess gas in over the border in Russia because they're not sending through those pipelines. It's sort of a mockery, really, to the European Union. There were very strong calls to completely stop importing gas from Russia entirely, but that was not possible because of the heavy reliance. This is the reality of this, especially in the Germans have had the fingers pointed to them quite heavily on this. The markets were so integrated, and they just, the Germans put a lot of effort and energy into the infrastructure to bring gas in from Russia into the European Union, into their country, and then else to passing it on as well. But this is decades long structures now, and now we're trying to sort of untwine them. But the reality is that's very, very complicated to do, especially with these prices soaring and the crisis that really is impending now.
Jack, thank you very much for that analysis. That's Jack Parrock, Brussels-based EU correspondent. And one of the figures that Jack mentioned there was that average increase of €18 per megawatt hour to €310 per megawatt hour. Neil MacDonald is with us. He's CEO at ISME, the Irish Small and Medium Enterprise Representative Organisation. Neil, for your members, price increases like that ultimately hit them directly in their bottom line. And for a lot of small and medium companies, presumably that would be simply unsustainable.
Good morning, Anton. You're right. It's not sustainable. And the choices that will be faced by, you know, particularly small businesses in grocery, baking, butchery, manufacturing, you know, there's a very limited range of responses to that. You either cut your energy consumption, which is very difficult to do, or you cut your staffing, or you increase your prices to customers, or some combination of those three. But there's no pleasant or painless options for people ahead in how they handle this.
Is there easy options for the government in how they respond or in how they put in place supports? Because I imagine this is one of those things where you want targeted measures, but very difficult to target effectively every business because it's every business that's impacted.
Correct, Anton. And there aren't quick fixes at this point. And unfortunately, the government is now faced with a policy menu that... Not unlike when people say, you know, we shouldn't have had a banking guarantee back in the Great Recession. But back in 2008, when that happened, there were no good options on the table for the government. And we're facing a crisis of that order now with energy. People don't appreciate that. But at the point where people are told the lights are going to go out, and I'm certainly old enough to remember candles in the evening at home when the electricity wasn't working. That is the order of magnitude we're facing now, and the government is going to have to take very difficult decisions in how they minimise and mitigate the effects of that this winter.
And if you look at the German response, the kind of thing of heating public buildings to a lower degree, so they're only taking them to 19 degrees Celsius, asking homeowners to reduce the amount of energy that they would consume, asking people who have private pools and public pools not to heat them, all of those kind of things, that's a big ask for an entire population to chip in and try to reduce energy consumption, particularly when hand in hand with that, some of what they've been advised over the last 2 years is to increase consumption. Take schools as a case in point. All of the schools have been told, keep ventilation, keep windows open, because that's what allows for decent air quality for COVID. That's still going to be the case into this winter, but that's also going to vastly increase their energy budgets. We have with us Matt Melvin, who's principal of St. Etienne's National School in Westmeath. Going to be a tricky winter for the schools, Matt.
Well, it certainly seems as if it is, but I suppose if you consider that 2 years ago we were wondering if the schools would open at all, so I think in the context of the challenges we faced over the past 2 years, it isn't insurmountable. But obviously, energy costs are going to be a huge factor. As you were saying, last winter we had the heat on and the windows open and children wearing coats because we wanted ventilation. Hopefully they won't be wearing coats this year because we haven't got heat or we can't afford to pay the bills, you know, because I think the answer to it is that the state is, you know, found the funding to keep schools open during COVID, and it's a matter of finding the funding to keep schools open during the energy crisis to provide them with additional funding. So I think that the answer to in relation to schools is not that difficult if we are aware, and we are aware now just how important schools are to society, that we need to fund schools properly. Like I was just looking there, in 2010 we were getting €200 per pupil to run the school, and we're now getting €183. So that's a huge decrease, you know, even since 2010. So we haven't made up the deficit that was put in place during the last recession. Now, during COVID, we did get considerably additional funding, and we were able to keep the schools open for the last 2 years. And it was one of the advantages of COVID is the treasurer wasn't giving out to me about you're spending too much money. There seemed to be ample money. So hopefully there will be ample money, and the minister and the government will provide sufficient funding for schools.
And just explain,
my understanding is that when schools are open, there isn't the same demand for electricity, so it should be okay.
Just explain, Matt, then, how that works in terms of the energy prices to the school. You get that €183 per student. Do you then pay the electricity bills and the heating bills out of that funding?
Oh, yeah, and cleaning bills and insurance and educational resources. So that's the funding in its entirety for the school for the year. You also get a minor works grant, which allows you to make, you know, adjustments and make changes to the school. And that was doubled over the period of COVID. And we got additional funding for cleaning and stuff during COVID. But that, if all the COVID payments are reduced, that €183 is what a school has to function on. And I was just looking up, I think it's something like 316 at post-primary level. So children, obviously, post-primary level, they it must be easier to heat them, or they need more money to be heated. So there's definitely a discrepancy there that the state just will have to address. And I think a can-do attitude and a common-sense approach will mean this can be done without fuss or without rancour.
But the difficulty is, though, that can-do attitude will be asked for by every sector. We were talking earlier on to Pat Leahy about the demands from the unions in respect of wage increases because of inflation. You just heard there from Neil MacDonald about the pressures that are coming on small to medium enterprises, and the education will be the same. There comes a point where there's no more money available to answer all that calls, no matter how positively disposed they might be.
I suppose that is the case, but I mean, it is like everything else, it's a matter of priority. Where do your priorities lie? And I mean, we're all aware that it is a priority that children are in school. And obviously schools are also going to have to, you know, try and, you know, conserve energy. And we indeed in this school over the past year have had an initiative to reduce our consumption, reduce our electricity usage, reduce our heating. So we all have to play a role in that. But ultimately, you know, you hopefully we won't have children wearing coats in schools this winter because they can't afford to put the heat on. You know, last year it was we had the heat on and we had the windows open because of ventilation. But I mean, schools need to be open. The damage to education that was done over COVID hasn't been repaired. It'll take a long time to repair it. And we really do need to, you know, there are priorities in place. You know, you know, when you want a fire engine, you don't say, can I afford it or not? You have to get it. So, you know, this is something that is going to have to be addressed, and it's going to have to be addressed with goodwill and with a certain degree of you know, generosity, and people realizing that there are priorities that are needed. You know, schools, hospitals, old folks homes, all those kind of places have to be funded appropriately, because otherwise, you know, we're left with a scenario where they can't function, because, you know, that's what schools are operating on. I really do believe that you know, common sense will prevail here.
Although it's funny, Matt, we're getting a lot of texts along the lines of this one saying this is why parents are asked for money each year, because the government comes up short. If schools already need to raise voluntary contributions to try to keep the lights on, if the lights become exponentially more expensive, where does the money come from?
Schools go into debt. I mean, I can't imagine people cutting off the electricity or refusing to provide heating for school. Our electricity doubled, actually, between September 20 and June 22. And most schools are in contracts as well, which we would be. And we're on the government procurement for LPG for heat. So in a way, the increases are kind of set aside to whenever your contract, you know, the terms of your contract. So it's not as if, you know, schools will all of a sudden hit a wall next December. They'll hit the wall when their contracts are up for renewal and when the price goes up, which is, I think, much the same as happens in business as well. A friend of mine is a small business owner, and his electricity contract was up for renewal, and I think it has doubled over the next year. You know, but we are going to have to set aside, look for our priorities in schools and have a can-do attitude towards it. And obviously conserve energy, but we are going to have to keep our schools open and we are going to have to fund them properly, particularly primary schools.
Matt, thank you very much for coming on this morning. That's Matt Melvin, who is principal of St. Etienne's National School in Westmeath. Can I go back briefly, Neil MacDonald, to you as CEO of ISMEI? Because you find yourself, I think, in a unique position, which is that your desire in respect of the treatment of the large energy companies and the people before profit TD, Paul Murphy's desire, align exactly. You both want windfall taxes.
Not quite, Matt. I mean, Anton, we don't view windfall taxes as a good approach to this. I mean, we were specifically asked on that whether they could be on the table in order to pay for the supports that have to go to small business and to citizens this winter. You actually put your finger on it when you were talking to Matt there, when you talked about budgetary priorities. And that's exactly the point that, you know, Michael McGrath, Pascal Donoghue have to bear in mind. For example, in the public sector talks on pay talks that are taking place at the moment, those pay talks, unfortunately, whether those people want to hear this message or not, have now been relegated to third or fourth place in order of priority for spending this winter. Because, you know, as Mick said, we have to keep the schools open and we cannot allow this level, this order of price increase on energy, because that will affect every single person in the state, not just the 15% of workers that are in the public sector.
But hang on, so go back for a minute. You had previously supported the notion of a windfall tax. Have you resiled from that position?
We haven't resiled from it. As I said to you in the first part, Anton, there are no good options on the table for government now. There are very few, as far as I'm aware, there's only one primary energy producer in the country. The rest are resellers or wholesalers of some degree. The money does have to come from somewhere. And while very large profits are being generated in the energy sector at the moment, that is a sector that could naturally be turned to take some of the fat off the top to pay for those direct supports that are going to have to be given to SMEs and to citizens. But in reality, as I started off by saying with the bank guarantee, the place to start is we should never have got here in the first place. We should have designed resilience and redundancy into our energy generation system. We didn't. We should have gas and electricity interconnectors that we have literally only a gas connector to the UK. The problem is we have allowed ourselves to get into a situation we should never have
done. Indeed, and I suspect there'll be a lot of analysis in the weeks to come asking how we ended up so dependent on Russian oil. Neil MacDonald, thank you very much. That is Neil MacDonald, who is CEO at ISMEI.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.